The ones that hate me the most look just like me. You tell me what that means. Make a slick comment and see what that brings. I seen it go down, we can reenact things. Extreme like BMXing. These boys and they BMXing. People in the city see the movement occurring and say, my God, I wanna be in that scene. Right, you wanna be in this scene. She had the video trying to be in this scene. Used to fantasize about being this scene. Bluegrass girl, but she got big dreams.
Big dreams indeed on this Halloween weekend. I might be Tower Hero for Halloween.
That would be
a good costume.
I wanted a jersey so bad, a Miami Vice Tyler Hero.
Yeah.
Crisp.
But you did not get one.
Just like my homeboy Tyler down and stuff. My boy Tyler down.
Oh, you know him.
It's your homeboy. It's like Max with Terrell Pryor.
Oh, yeah. Max.
Who?
He knows Terrell Pryor.
Who knows Terrell Pryor?
We met him like 3 years ago, and now he knows him.
I think I remember when you guys told me that story.
We never told you that story.
No, I thought you told me he met.
This was
we
did,
blue yes,
face.
Blue
this
face.
Blue, oh, blue face.
We're not gonna.
It was blue.
We're not gonna get into
it.
That. This is not the Max show.
Yeah.
Well, here we are. This is Baldwin in the Berg. Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Welcome into Baldwin in the Berg on this Friday afternoon, morning. I don't know what I. You know.
It's after
last night, which we will get into a little bit. We'll get to it a little bit later on in the show because it's a segment on today's show. So today is October 30th, 2020. This is week 8, maybe week 9 of the RMU semester. I've kind of lost track of time at this point.
I think it's week 10.
No, it is not week 10.
I'd say 9.
It might be week 10 in Golvash's head because we've not seen him in the past 2 weeks.
It's week 10 or week 9.
So before we begin the show, let's introduce ourselves and let our co-host here, Golvash, explain where he is. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
And Andrew Golvash, tell us, where have you been? We haven't seen you.
You weren't here last week.
I wasn't here because I was planning to come up Tuesday.
He was on assignment.
Yeah.
What was your assignment? I was coming up on Tuesday, and then next thing you know, I wake up, and I feel terrible.
Oh, boy.
I felt miserable.
Oh, no.
I had a runny nose. I was coughing, and then I went to work, and I just felt awful. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to play it safe. Not going to come up at all until Friday, until the radio show. And if we didn't have it, I wasn't even going to come up then.
Yeah. But we did have it.
But we did have it, and here I am, and I am feeling much better since that time. So, there's my excuse.
Did you have the common cold?
Yes, I did actually, because whenever I went up to Johnstown for the weekend for my
that's why he wasn't here last week.
He was on assignment trying to get a story from Johnstown
for my little hockey tournament. I was walking around with only maybe a hoodie. And then the T-shirt, it was
a hoodie, a T-shirt, and your mask.
In my mask. No mask forever there.
Wow, that's very smart of you to say.
Yes, but, yeah, no. It was a rough time, and then I came back with a cold, and then it only got worse from there.
Well, we're happy to have you back.
And I'm back.
We're happy to also have the Steelers successful ways back. 6-1, 6-0, going to face the Ravens 5-1. Yeah, I was looking at both my statistics. I was looking at both the standings, and the numbers kind of blended together. So, as I mentioned, Steelers are 6-0. Ravens are 5-1. In game in Baltimore this week, Ravens are 4-point favorites. I don't know how much you want to take off of that in terms of home field advantage or so of that
really,
sort.
Really, isn't any home field advantage.
Not
here.
Necessarily.
Are they bringing fans?
There will be some fans.
Okay. So
what I take from it, though, is that the Ravens, in the eyes of Vegas, is still viewed as the superior team, probably based on their success that they had last season and the fact that the Steelers have just played a bunch of close games against, teams. And then Tennessee last week, the almost collapse that was there. So let's start with Tennessee. Steelers pretty much dominated the first half altogether.
Best half of football. Also.
No
yeah,
doubt.
It was a perfect half of football.
They controlled the clock. They controlled the possession downs.
Kept Derrick Henry off the field.
Derrick Henry had like 15 yards rushing at halftime. So I think just overall the defense played phenomenal, but the offense was just clicking in that first half. And then in the second half, offense could not sustain any drives. Ben couldn't really connect with his receivers. And a couple interceptions by Ben is really what was able to have Tennessee have a chance to get back in the game.
Well, I think Mike Vrabel, being the coach that he is, he adjusted to what the Steelers were
exactly.
doing, and then the Steelers didn't really counter adjust. We kept doing what we were doing, and that's what allowed the Titans to creep back.
And I think the Titans can still sort of be seen as a team that is on the verge of being a really good team. Obviously, their record indicates that they're one of the better teams in football. And last year, the way they performed late in the season, you know, they're much better than they have been in the past decade. But I think the one thing that's going to make them a step ahead of a lot of these other teams is that fact that Vrabel and the Titans can adjust to other teams, and they were able to do that against the Steelers, who are arguably the best team in football right now. And their ability to sort of adjust and find a way to get back in it. But then also, I think the Steelers got too loose. And I had that feeling because they were really controlling the ball easily throughout the first half. And then Ben sort of became lousy and sort of was floating a few balls up there. The one to the end zone that should have just never been there, where there was four guys
at the end of the first half where Ben's just throwing it up there.
You could have gotten an extra three. Like, it's points or points. Take the field goal.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be seven.
Remember, always kick the field goal if they're giving it to you.
Always kick the field goal.
So, yeah, I don't know why that decision was made by Ben to just decide to throw a deep ball there as the clock was starting to expire.
Don't question Ben.
I really want to shout out Robert Spillane for his play on the goal line on Derrick Henry. That was just a tough physical play. He busted up his shoulder a little bit, but was able to get back in there and play. So,
and that's what
he
I
did
said.
Pretty well filling in for Devin Bush.
That's what I said last week. I mean, have him just fill your gaps at linebacker and just go after Henry. And at least that play, obviously he did, and that was a big play for the Steelers.
What did you think about the Cam Sutton trade rumors?
I don't know if they were trade rumors. I think they were just Cam Sutton talking rumors. And what is he talking about?
People just misinterpret stuff on Instagram.
Yeah, it might have been misinterpreted, but like,
well, there was also nothing to be interpreted at the same time.
He was throwing up the peace sign emojis. Whenever the deadline's around and like you were in need of like players, I mean, you could kind of mistake that as saying, yeah, we might be trading this dude.
Also, the one thing that worries me about the Steelers is if they continue to ride this hot streak and they end up only losing like two, three, four games in the season, it worries me that they're going to get, like I said, too loose and maybe even either too loose or something's going to go wrong in terms of an Antonio Brown type situation
I don't think it will be, but I'm worried that it might, and
the Sutton incident was something that like, oh no, like what's going on here? They're 6-0. Why would someone want to leave?
Well,
the team?
Cam Sutton's the fourth corner.
Yeah, he's.
I don't think he's going to end up. If he ends up being somewhat of a problem on social media, someone's going to talk to him in that locker room and tell him, "Look, dude, know your role. What are you doing?
What are you doing, dude?
So, in that regard, I just think that the team is so much more buttoned up.
I agree, and I think. Ben coming back as a leader, I think that really helps.
Yeah, Ben and Toblin and all the veterans are trying to keep the younger guys in check, for sure.
Because, I mean, overall, this team is pretty young. I mean, you got a younger offensive line this year, a very young wide receiver core. Very young wide receiver core, running back room. D-line is a little bit of a veteran group. But then the rest on defense is sort of just like a few years into the league. So
I mean, how
except
Spillane?
For like Joe Hayden.
How old's Spillane? Is he
young guy around 26 years old?
Solid.
And also, he's a guy with no experience, so even that plays a factor in people trying to
call him a rookie.
He's been around a little bit, just kind of bouncing through some practice squads and trying to find a way to really be able to stick in the NFL. But I think he played really well, and he played good complementary football to the other linebackers around him. Steelers didn't have that many sacks. I believe they had.
Their only sacks came from
Watt
who,
Williams.
Guess who?
Yeah, T.J. Watt.
T.J. Watt and Dupree, actually. But
it says Williams has a sack on here.
My apologies.
So Vince Williams might have a sack. So,
no.
Altogether.
Yes, I put that down wrong. Yeah,
altogether, pretty good win, though, for the Steelers. Commanding in the first half, worrisome in the second half, where if Gostkowski does not miss a field goal as time's about to expire, I don't know if the Steelers win that game.
I don't know, especially if Tennessee gets the ball.
Right, momentum is all on Tennessee's side.
Yeah. If Tennessee gets the ball, they're going down and they're driving on us.
They are taking Derrick Henry and they are putting their offense on his back, letting him carry them all the way down the field. I even thought
we bottled him up still. He still almost had 100 yards rushing.
Well, remember I said he would have less than 85 yards. Remember that? Where Austin was right and then he had 75?
I thought he had 85 on the dog.
I believe he had 75. Nate, our statistician, will check Nate, there.
Henry had 75 on the dot.
75 on the dot and the touchdown. Yeah, exactly.
Got to give credit to you, Austin, predicting that. But then also got to give credit to the Steelers D. Once again, I mean, that's what their calling card all year has been, stopping that run.
Yeah.
And I thought Henry would have broken out for a couple more runs of bigger gains. His longest was 17, which, I mean, it's a little bit long, but not bad. I mean, Steelers really kept him. Kept him at bay.
Because, I mean, the outside players are so quick. They're normally able to get to Henry before he's able to, like, really pick up speed and be able to shrug people off him. Because that's what makes him so effective. He's big, and then once he starts running downhill, he just mows you down.
Well, stopping the run was the key to a victory in last week's matchup against Tennessee.
It's going to be more important than ever.
It's definitely going to be as important, maybe even more important this week in Baltimore, obviously, with Lamar Jackson and questions as if Mark Ingram's going to play with some injuries.
I saw that.
They have J.K. Dobbins from Ohio State that many Steelers fans wanted the Steelers to draft. So going into it, Golvash, I think that the key is obviously to stop Lamar Jackson and try to contain his legs. And like I said about Derrick Henry, you're not going to stop Derrick Henry.
You just got to contain him.
You got to be able to contain him and limit him. Now, I think that you can stop Lamar Jackson in terms of running the football and force him to throw. In my opinion,
I just think that's score quickly. You got to jump the Ravens early, because I feel like if you get a lead on them, Lamar's not going to be able to run.
Well, I think you got to do exactly what you did against Tennessee. Maybe go ahead, take the ball. If you win the coin toss, go down and take the ball, kill some time. A long, methodical drive. Steelers burned like 8 minutes off the clock in that first drive against Tennessee.
Yeah, you keep the Ravens' offense off the field, and I think it's another successful day at the office.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go up, like, I mean, we've seen it. I mean, normally whenever they lose, it's whenever they get jumped on early, or like you even said, they get the clock run down on them. I mean, maybe if you jump 14-21-0, force Lamar to become a passer. 14-0 probably be more realistic. But if you're able to jump on that, I mean, Lamar's going to force the throw, and that's when, you know, Sutton, Fitzpatrick, all those guys, Hayden, can capitalize on it.
Yeah, I agree. Whenever you start getting Lamar to throw, I think that's where he's going to make his mistakes.
I mean, that's the same thing whenever the Chiefs killed him.
And I also think that was the same thing with Baker Mayfield. You start moving him around, he's going to start making mistakes. And Steelers defense, obviously one of the best in the league, but if you can keep him off the field for the most part and keep that offense on and just get those methodical drives out there, that is so helpful, not only in that game, but just going the rest of the season, getting them healthy.
It could be a game plan for the rest of the season, for that matter.
Right. So, just going into it, Ravens today, this morning, just made a big addition. Well, not addition, but addition for the long term in terms of a player that was up for free agency this year.
For a long time.
Tackle Ronnie Stanley agrees to a 5-year extension with the Ravens.
I saw that driving up.
Up around $98 million, which is still less than the Laramie Tunsil deal that Houston signed. So
How much did they sign Tunsil?
Oh, a lot. It's about $22 million a year. So there's Houston coming into the fold in a negative light once again. But they also signed Marlon Humphrey earlier in the season. Obviously, the Steelers do not make contract decisions during the season. They make them, obviously, if they can't get them done before the end of training camp, at the very end of the season. And I don't know if I like this philosophy from Baltimore. Obviously, it hasn't really hampered their ability to win. But, I mean, credit the Ravens for getting their players signed, but they're in the middle of the season. I don't know. I just don't like the contract talks.
I think, especially this weekend of the season. I think one thing is, you know, how much the Ravens are obviously focusing on this game. You know, the personnel on the team, the coaches. But the organization almost has, like, this tone that, like, hey, we're trying to gear up for the playoffs. Maybe this game isn't honestly as important as it usually is, which it is. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to put it in that perspective. But they're doing a lot of trades. They're making a lot of moves. They're signing guys. They just signed Dez Bryant. Like, there's a lot of different things that's going on in this organization that makes me think, like, they're trying to gear up for later in the season. Yes, this is a very important game coming up now, especially in the division.
Yeah.
But it just makes me think,
Do you think it's the mentality, like, hey, we know we're good enough that we're going to make playoffs, so we're just going
to
gear up?
Yeah, and it's almost like now you throw in Dez Bryant and he tries to go in there against the Steelers. I mean, If they try to throw to him a couple times,
is he suiting up? Or
you know what? I'd assume he'd probably not be.
Shout out my boy Alex Adeluka, who's a Ravens fan. They said he was mocking Claypool for the practice squad. So he was just playing like Claypool.
Yeah, I'm sure they want a guy that can play that role because, I mean, besides Miles Boykin, I mean, they really don't have that big of receivers.
They don't have big receivers or. Other than Marquise Brown, they really don't have that much of a deep threat.
They don't have much of a receiving core in general.
They have a couple solid pieces,
I'm talking about like wide receivers, wide receivers.
Depth-wise,
tight ends are great. They're great receiving options. And then besides Marquise Brown, I can't really name many good receivers.
I think that's the focus of this team is more of the running aspect because Lamar can obviously run. Ingram, you have Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, the rookie. So all these guys can step in, and they just look at the two tight end set often, and someone who probably might hurt them going later down in the season of not being there is Hayden Hurst. You know, one of the guys they drafted in 2018.
It just made them that much better because I mean you had three good.
Yeah,
tight ends.
Now they still have two good tight ends in Boyle and Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews is probably a top five tight end in the league.
Yeah, he's up there for sure.
They had the ability to trade from him from a position of depth. And now he's, you know, with Atlanta.
How's that going for you?
Not very great.
He's had an okay season, but like, yeah, the Falcons in general are just awful.
So let me ask you, do you think this is going to be a bloodbath, grinded out, close game, or do you think it's going to be a shootout?
I think it's going to be close. Because, I mean, both teams like to establish the run. I would say the Ravens more than us. But I really do think it's going to be like a really close game.
I'm trying to stay in terms of toughness. Is it going to be a close game, guys are bleeding out there, or is it going to be a shootout where the offense is just star?
No.
Defense or offense?
This is going to be a defensive game.
I think it's going to be a defensive game, and I think you're going to see a lot of that, you know, toughness, hard hitting. You know, things you've seen from James Harrison and Ryan Clark in this rivalry and just stuff along those lines. And also, I think the people who might thrive the most in it and helping just get it to the top in terms of, you know, this game is already so important between the two top teams in the AFC North. But I think it's actually going to be the wide receivers for the Steelers. I think those young guys, you know, you're going to see them make some catches and there's going to be some stuff that you're going to see people get into the face of. Players get in the face of the Ravens defense. I think it could get ugly on that terms of things. I mean, if the Steelers start running things up, which you hope if they do, they don't, you know, start losing it and get a little too cocky.
Take penalties,
because you know, like, if they get up and Juju starts, you know, making some catches, you know he's going to start doing.
He's going to start pointing at people.
I'm not saying he's an instigator, but it could end up like that, and I think things could get a little ugly. I think this is one of your more, you know, intense games between. I mean, it's always intense, but I think in terms of hitting and along those lines, it's going to be a very intense game and fun to watch, no doubt.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a fun. As you said, it's going to be a fun game to watch, no doubt. But I think it could be just a defensive stalwart because I mean, both teams could arguably say you have top five defenses in the league, and both offenses have elite firepower and. I don't know. It's just going to be fun to see how these two giants collide.
One player that's been playing out of his mind in the last couple of games for the Steelers is James Conner. He looks healthy. He looks a little refreshed.
Pro Bowl material?
No, I don't really care if he makes the Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl material?
Nobody will make the Pro Bowl if the Steelers continue the job that they're doing right now. So, Nate, what do you make of Conner's production right now and just the level of play that he's producing at?
I think, you know, his identity is just to be a tough runner and going at guys. He's not really an elusive type back. Can't really make those, you know, those shifty moves that someone like Le'Veon Bell does. He's good at just being a downhill runner and going at guys, and he's found success doing that. And he's found some holes a lot better than he did last year and a little bit earlier this year. You know, he's coming, and it's so nice to see for the Steelers aspect that they have a reliable back, and they don't have to worry about who's going to be their number one guy each and every week. They know Connor's their guy. And then also it makes the Ravens' D, you know, fine-tune their defense going into that week to play Connor well, and then also gives you that option of play action passes, you know, and it's just such a diverse offense this year for the Steelers, and it's so important, and that's why they're 6-0.
Exactly. And I also think him being healthy is a huge factor because, as we saw over the last, 2 years or even especially last year, I mean, he couldn't stay on
his whole career.
His whole career. He's never really been able to stay on the field. But when he's on the field, he's on the field and healthy, he's productive.
Yeah, and he's had some bumps and bruises early on this season, but it really hasn't affected
It really hasn't been able to keep him off the field that much. And when he – the 2 games before the Titans game, he had 2 straight 100-yard rushing games, correct?
I believe he's had a couple hundred.
The Eagles, Texans.
I believe he had back-to-back 100-yard games. I mean, 100 total scrimmage yards. I mean, he's been a solid complete back. And then you got the change of pace back with Anthony McFarland Jr. And then you got the goal line back with Benny Snell.
Yeah, and those guys really haven't seen that much time because of how good Connor's been.
I mean, and even if Connor starts to struggle, you have plenty of other options to bring
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you can just do running back by committee.
And I think that we knew coming into this year with Ben coming back and the offensive receiving weapons he had that this offense was going to be a lot better. But this offense has gotten over the top because of Connor's play and just the ability for Connor to go in there and then someone like McFarland and Snell to come in and just add a couple more yards to it. But it's just so important that Connor is playing at the level he is. And it's helping out the defense, once again, taking time off the field for where the defense can rest, whereas last year the defense was carrying this team. They won them a lot of games, but they couldn't win them any more than they did because they didn't have the ability to stay. They didn't have the ability to control the ball for like they are this year.
I mean, yeah, defense obviously can't control the football, but like once you...
Defense can win you championships, but they can't win you a championship with no offense whatsoever.
Exactly. I mean, the key here with the Steelers, I got nothing. I completely lost my train of thought. Completely lost it.
The key to the Steelers is defense, Golbash.
Really?
But the offense, making sure that they're able to cement the great play that the defense brings.
To make it a memorable defense.
To be able to make it not just a memorable defense, to be able to make it a great offense like it's been this year, averaging around like 30 points a game.
Yeah, what, 30 points a game? And like what, about last 3 games, close or even close to it? I mean, I know
they've been doing a great job.
Yeah, been on fire.
Point of that is the fact that there's really been, you know, not that much injuries that the Steelers have faced this year. As we look at this week's injury report, a lot of people on the injury report, but we'll break it down right now. Ben Roethlisberger, obviously him, DeCastro, Tuitt got days off, Veterans Days off on Wednesday, returned to practice fully. Juju Smith-Schuster battling a knee injury. He was not available to practice on Wednesday. Full participant Thursday. Mike Hilton was limited with a shoulder injury that kept him completely out of practice on Wednesday. He's going to try to give it a go this weekend. We'll see what his progress is on Friday. Jordan Dangerfield has popped up on the injury report with a quad injury. He did not practice both days. Derek Watt, after being a full participant Wednesday, was limited with the hamstring injury that he's been battling for virtually all season. Marquise Pouncey has an elbow injury. He was a full participant after not practicing on Wednesday. He usually gets a Veterans Day off, though, on Wednesday. Alejandro Villanueva, also battling an elbow injury. He was full. Same thing with Eric Ebron. A lot of elbow injuries for the Steelers.
How do you keep managing to get elbow injuries?
I don't know. Maybe they're just like on the table and they hit their elbow. Like I just hit my elbow on the table for demonstration. Chris Wormley is also battling a knee injury that popped up on the injury report on Wednesday. He did not practice. And then Ulysses Gilbert. He appeared on the injury report after being a full participant on Wednesday. A back injury sidelined him on Thursday. He did not practice. Golbash was inactive for the first couple of games until last week, where he filled in on some sub packages at middle linebacker for the defense.
Okay.
There's your Ulysses Gilbert report. And that is your injury report.
We'll get into
the prediction side of things in a little bit. And unless anybody else has anything to do with the Steelers, we'll move on to college football.
No, let's get into it.
College football. Pitt is off this week after a 45-3 shellacking at the home of the Notre Dame Tommy Allen Irish.
Remember when we said we thought we'd beat Notre Dame?
No, I never said that.
I think me and Nate might have said that.
I mean, I thought it would be a much closer game. I didn't think they were going to win, but I thought if there was a game this year that they'd upset against either Miami, Clemson, or Notre Dame, it'd be Notre Dame. Because yeah. I mean, Notre Dame only beat Louisville 12-7 2 weeks ago, and I just didn't think they would have, you know, the firepower to...
Or the words that Austin put it, that they would give us a shellacking such as 45.
I didn't think they'd have the firepower to put up 45 on one of the best run defenses in the league. Yeah, their secondary isn't that good this year, even with returning guys in safety positions and DeMar Hanlon and Paris Ford, but they're just no answer. I mean, Ben Skowronek had two receptions for 107 yards.
What?
73-yard touchdown and a 30-yard touchdown.
Dude, that's like a Randy Moss type performance.
He just cooked the Pitt defense. There was no chance. I mean, they just got burnt several times, and there was just no answer for this Pitt team at all. And it didn't help that Kenny Pickett wasn't in there at cornerback. Because of an ankle injury. Joey Yellen was in there. The red shirt freshman went 10 for 27. Three picks. Dude just was so bad at reading the defense and Notre Dame. They just threw a lot of different packages at him, and it just made him so confused, he struggled.
So Notre Dame was able to make him feel really, really uncomfortable sitting in that pocket trying to deliver footballs, and they just picked him apart.
And Yellen looked good. Yellen looked pretty decent for filling in for Pickett in Miami. And granted, Miami is a little bit, they can, a lot
they're
of
deceiving.
Times. Yeah, they're deceiving because they didn't even play that well of a game against Pitt. But the score was still, I believe, 31-14 or somewhere along those lines. So, but Yellen just wasn't able to get anything going. I mean, there was times where he just locked in on a receiver and tried to throw the ball, and there was one time he threw it right over the middle, and the underneath linebacker just stepped up and
made
a pick.
They should have started the young guy early at the very beginning of the game.
Davis Bebel. He went
Bebel.
In for one
or
pass.
Or else he's going to transfer.
Nick Patty also was in there for 2 for 5, but he's not good either.
Nick Patty is good.
Remember who would you rather have
out there, Nick Patty or Mimi Patty? My grandmother.
I'd rather have Mimi.
Yeah.
Nick Patty subbed in for Kenny Pickett against UCF.
If you are questioning what option that you want to take, just remember that when at the Geneva trip this year, when me, Alex, Nick Tarrant, Colin, and Joey Shields went up to Geneva, Mimi Patty made lunch for us. Mimi Patty came in clutch, so we didn't have to go spend our money.
I'm sorry, what does that have to do with playing quarterback in college football?
Well, it has to do with if you're going to do a pick'em, because I brought to the table a quick pick of who would you rather have terms of Mimi Patty's cooking or Nick Patty's quarterbacking.
You know, we're going Mimi Patty.
Yeah.
Because
No offense to Nick Patty.
Nick Patty goes 2 for 5 in this game, but Mimi Patty came in clutch with
yes.
the lunch.
Yes, Mimi Patty came in clutch.
Didn't
Mimi
Nick,
Patty
didn't
came
Patty
in clutch
throw
with
a
the,
touchdown
with
that
the lunch.
Game?
Yeah.
I definitely have to clip this and send this to her. She would love to
he
hear
it. He threw
this.
It to Dontarius Butler Jenkins.
Who?
Yeah. Who?
What?
Who?
What? But back on, we want to go back to the Notre Dame pick game, or are we still talking Mimi Patty? Did you give your pick? Who are you taking? Mimi Patty or Nick Patty?
I did. I said Mimi. Okay.
So with the clean sleep, we take Mimi Patty, all three.
Clean sleep, baby!
I love you, Mimi Patty. Thank you very much for tuning into our show, Baldwin and the Berg, today. But Penn State hosts Ohio State, and it's not looking very great for Penn State in terms of the line. 11.5 in favor of Ohio State.
I mean, probably going to kill him.
Well, after Penn State lost on the road at Indiana on a two-point conversion attempt that was not scored, but they said it was a score anyway. He was short. Don't change my mind.
It looked like he was short as well. I mean, what was their justification of it?
They let the call stand.
One, it was called on the field. Two,
what?
The issue is it being
called touchdown on the field.
Yeah, the issue here was the ball looked like it was down out of bounds before he got to the plane, but if there was another angle that I could see from the other side, like right on where the ball is, the tip of the nose of the football that wasn't touching down on the side on the sideline may have crossed the goal line, and that's where that referee saw. That's what that goal line judge saw whenever that play first when it occurred in real speed. But that one's tough,
and I think obviously it should be overturned. But I mean, the way that the referees roll, just with making those calls, there definitely just wasn't enough to overturn it.
I mean, and also you got to give a lot of credit to Indiana, but also Penn State shot themselves in the foot several times.
Yeah,
because Penn State number 8 in the nation, but Indiana, there was a lot of speculation about Indiana might come in here and upset Penn State, and that's what they did. Yeah, they got some luck, and yeah, Penn State.
Hey, that's what it takes for an upset. You need a little bit of skill and a little bit of luck to get in the way.
And the biggest thing that Penn State did was late in the game with 1:42 left, Devin Ford ran from like the 11-yard line, and Indiana, he got the first down, and Indiana had one timeout left, and he went into the end zone. Todd Gurley.
Like somebody. Honestly, I don't like that idea of blaming that on players for scoring a touchdown.
Well, the one also your momentum is carrying you, but Devin Ford was like trotting into the end zone. He stepped right in the end zone, and he's like, "Oh crap, I should have went down."
Yeah.
But don't you feel like your defense should be able? I mean, it's different because like NFL, like you get paid to play defense, and they had, as you said, they had what, maybe a minute. How much time did Indiana have?
1:42 it would have been.
1:42 with one time. I mean, that's a lot less time than Detroit had. I mean, all it relatively is like a couple tackles in bounds, and then you win the game.
Yeah, but Penn State.
But, I mean, it's no excuse. If you're told to go down, you should be able to go down.
And I think that's another thing. I think I want to say he's a sophomore, maybe. Yeah, he's a sophomore. Now, here's the thing. Devin Ford slides in as their number one back when Penn State arguably had the best running back room heading into this season. But Journey Brown, just a few weeks back, came out and said he had an undisclosed health issue. I believe actually it turned out to be a heart condition. So he is basically out for the season.
Is his career in jeopardy?
Potentially. I mean, he wasn't able to play this year, and he was their number one guy. Noah Kane, I think at the beginning of the game in Indiana, he suffered a leg injury, and he's out for the rest of the season. And then 5-star Ricky Slade transferred to Old Dominion back in June. So this running back room,
Old Dominion,
was full of 4 and 5-star running backs, and they've lost 3 out of the 4 to start the season.
And Clifford looked pretty terrible last week.
Clifford, 2 picks.
He looked more like a runner.
Yeah, he wasn't able to really. I mean, and a lot of people are looking at him to be a star quarterback and potentially play in the NFL, but he wasn't able to, you know, take control of this offense necessarily, and allowed Indiana to get back in it.
Now he's, I mean,
and now they have Ohio State.
Ohio State's going to kill them.
I think it's going to be a touchdown game. I don't think it's going to be
on
close.
That. You I think it's going to be close.
You think it's close?
I don't think that Penn State's going to end up winning, but unless maybe they bring the virtual whiteout for the game. The virtual whiteout.
I saw the video. There was a video going around when Penn State played Michigan last year.
Yeah, that's...
Was that last year?
That's easily, I believe,
dude,
so.
That moment, I was like, wow.
That's easily one of the best moments I've ever seen in college football.
Do you know what we're talking about?
I don't exactly
it's,
know.
It's the first play of the game, Michigan versus Penn State.
Michigan versus Penn State. It was last year. They played Mo Bamba. I mean, the place is roaring. And then what? They took a delay game.
Shea Patterson never snapped the ball.
He never snapped the ball, and then the place just erupts.
Yeah, I've seen that video before. It just tells you, you know, what goes on in Happy Valley.
It also just gives you a reason to like college football. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard an NFL stadium really like that's as the, loud as that.
College football, I think, also they have a lot more fans at all their stadiums because there's a lot of stadiums that have like 60,000 plus. Penn State, Michigan State, all those teams, Ohio State, Bama, they all have those big stadiums. But this definitely could have been a great game if there was full capacity, because it would have definitely been their whiteout, because it's the biggest, most crucial matchup of the year.
And if you think the crowd's in there, do you think Penn State has no problem?
I think they do a lot better, because a few years back in this rivalry, 2016, whenever Pitt beat them, they went on and Penn State played them at home in the whiteout, and they won. Dude, for the first time in like a few years, dude, and then they went on.
How did we beat that team? How did we stop Saquon?
Well, Pitt had their best offensive team in history, but their defense was pretty bad. Luckily, they held on by 3 points.
Dude, Saquon probably just tore us up. I don't even remember
Saquon that day in 2016. He didn't have a spectacular day. I mean, he had probably nearly 80 to 100 yards, but wasn't
I don't remember that. I don't remember the stat line that day.
Uh-oh. You know what the sound of the ringtone means. It's time for
Is it that time?
Mystery caller. So before we unveil who the mystery caller is, Golvash and Nate, give your guesses for this week's mystery caller. And your clue for this week is...
Oh, we got a clue?
The clue for this week is something you don't expect.
Well, that helps.
Oh, great.
Going off the limb, it's Meadville.
It's Muffin.
No, it is not. Wait. They're not on my phone. Hold on.
Wait, what did you do?
Austin's opening the door.
Hello. Our mystery guest is here.
Is it Nick Hedrick?
Our mystery guest is here.
It is Nick Hedrick.
My God.
Nick, your seat is awaiting you right here.
Your seat is awaiting. Hello and welcome live onto Baldwin and the Bird.
Thank you.
Boss, Nick Hedrick.
Thank you.
So,
not my boss.
How are you doing? How are you doing today? Thanks for joining us.
Well, I got a text from Austin Bechtold at 2:30 in the morning, radio call-in guest, question mark, to which I replied, huh?
Oh, I wonder why he was up at 2:30 in the morning.
To which I replied, excuse me?
To which I woke up this morning at 9:45 to a text that said, are you coming?
Yes. He was like, I thought I was calling, and I was like, well, I think it would be more fun if you just appear.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
I don't have class today, and I woke up at 9:45 to be here. Ooh. On Baldwin in the Bird.
So we appreciate that.
So this better be worthwhile.
This will be worthwhile.
This guy gets it.
Lots of fun. So why was I up that late last night? We're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. But first,
Goldberg,
our irrelevant fact of the day. As always, we have an irrelevant fact of the day, Nick. So the irrelevant fact of the day is we'll just go into what we did last night. We filmed RMU Focus live from the apartment
from Adams 3A.
We filmed it from Adams 3A, which was a time.
Night.
We started filming at like 11 and never got done until around 2 in the morning because we only had like 9 minutes that we had to film.
And the post-production meeting was at Sheets.
Yeah, we went to Sheets for the post-production meeting.
It's a hell of a meeting.
So when we had to clean up the room to get ready,
selling your stuff.
Go back. We put up a sign and said, everything must go. For your stuff, because you've not been in our Golvash has not been in our room in 2 weeks.
I wouldn't be either if I lived with you two.
Oh wow, he wants to stay.
Thank you for understanding.
Fair enough.
He was staying closer to home.
Maybe Breisinger could keep me there, but I don't know. I don't know.
So
it's a hard sell.
So Golvash, the next time you go back into our room, all your snacks are gone. We gave them to the Loud Lounge from two in the morning.
No, you didn't.
That's your irrelevant fact.
We were competing with the lounge of being the
loudest
in the building.
That's your irrelevant fact of the day. So
did you win?
Don't know.
We'll be producing RMU Focus today, and it's going to be a hard time to do that, but we're going to try our best.
Give it your best effort.
We ask Nick Hedrick now, Nick, what would you want to talk about on the show?
No, that's just amateur hour. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. What do you talk about on here?
We can talk about the World Series. We could talk about the Steelers. We were going to get into the World Series a little bit.
I was about to say, yeah, we can take I definitely want to get into that a little bit.
Take your pick.
Well, do what you do, and I'll just be here.
All right, you'll just be here.
I'll just be here to chime in a witty comment now and then.
Yeah, a witty sly comment.
So let's go right into the World Series then. Dodgers' first title since 1988. Corey Seager, eighth ever to win the LCS and World Series MVP. Mookie Betts stole some tacos. What's your initial reaction, Nate, to just the Dodgers winning first time in a long time, I believe 32 years?
It was a long time coming for this team. And now I guess they can claim themselves as the city of champions with the Lakers and now the Dodgers, but they were the better team overall, and obviously your payroll is going to indicate that. The Rays obviously put up a big fight, had guys like Randy Arozarena come out of nowhere and turn into stars in front of our eyes, but the likes of Corey Seager.
Corey, you can say the same for Seager.
Seager, yeah, he emerged as a really
we always knew Seager was good, but like
on a Dodgers team that is full of talent, yeah, he really emerged just this postseason, and then guys like Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, all guys stepping up, and I think it was time for the Dodgers. They finally just said enough's enough.
Yeah, it was a well-deserved championship for them. I mean, after 2017 and then getting stomped by the Red Sox, I mean, it was definitely a long-deserved, especially for Kershaw as well, who played phenomenal in the two World Series games he pitched. I mean, as Nate said, I mean, this team was just all in all better. They had so many great arms to throw at you. The bats were incredible. Even their bench players were better than some of the Rays starters. Like, I mean, it was such a good deep team. I mean, I figured they were gonna win one soon. I mean, now is the time. And congrats to the Dodgers.
They were basically.
I guess I talk now.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to. It's your show. No. I know how you get about your things. I don't want to come in here like I own the
floor. You have the floor.
I don't want you to get rid of my snacks.
Oh, your snacks are still
there.
I'd like
there to be justice for Blake Snell.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway from Game 6. Game 4 was one of the best games of baseball I've ever watched. I think that's great. Like a top 5 game for me. That ending was incredible. And what a mess. And I don't like the Dodgers. I'll gladly work for them one day if they're hiring. But, I mean, you know, it was good to see them lose that game. And then I was really hopeful that completely swung the momentum. But, unfortunately, that was not the case because Game 5 was incredibly boring. And then Game 6, they kind of, gave it up, the Rays did, when they took out Blake Snell. And it was frustrating to see.
Yeah.
There was, like, no momentum after that.
I'm completely against that decision. I hated that they took Snell out. He was pitching the game of his life.
He had two hits, 9 strikeouts.
Who was for the decision?
No one.
Nobody was for it.
But the thing is, that's how the Rays got there. He had never. I watched Nick Wright. He said he never got past. He never really got to, like, the third part of the order, ever.
So
this whole season. And so, like,
you're pitching that great. I don't really care about what you did.
Exactly.
In the past.
I'm not caring either. But, like, that was just his approach. And it. I mean it. That's what
didn't let
them
go deep in the ball games. Yeah,
yeah. They just don't let their dudes go deep in the ball games. But, like, if you're gonna take them out, don't put in Nick Anderson. I mean, the dude was awful all postseason. I mean, at least put in one of your better relievers to help keep you into the game. I mean, every time that Nick Anderson was in the game, he gave up a run.
Someone that can get you out of a jam.
Yeah. So throw in one of your better arms and then save a couple for Game 7 if you get there.
I mean, Nick Anderson is a decent arm, but...
I know, he wasn't good this postseason at all.
You have to trust the eye test over the analytics.
Ooh.
And, you know, the numbers can lie.
And
if you're out there watching that game, you know that there's no reason why you take Blake Snell out.
Yeah,
there's no reason. I don't care what your numbers say. You're crunching the numbers in the back there. I don't care. Are you in the game? The numbers are not in the game, in the stadium, watching what's going on right now.
Yeah, it's a fine line between being analytical and quote-unquote smart and then having a feel for the game.
But the analytics is what defined the Rays. That's how they got here.
I know.
And it's what burned them.
I know. They lived by the analytics. They died by the analytics.
They did.
Billy Bean's crying somewhere.
Billy Bean is somewhere.
He's crying in Boston right now.
Why wasn't it a mound visit, though? If they were going to consider pulling him out, why didn't they at least go out there and go, hey, like, are you still feeling it or not?
Right.
Because he was grooving.
That is a good point.
I mean, his stuff was – I mean, he struck out the top three of the order multiple times. I mean, he got through Betts, Seager, all those guys. I mean, he just made them look silly. And then at least keep him in to deal with those guys and then put in someone else afterwards.
So, other big news this week, the White Sox decided to hire 76-year-old Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Nick, what's your thoughts on this? He last managed the Cardinals when they won the World Series.
Well, I hope they have Depends in the dugout. other than that, I mean, I respect what Tony La Russa has done for the game. I think I saw this morning he's managed like 2.9%, or he's been involved. And 2.9% of games since, like, 1891 or something.
Wow. What?
And there's been, like, 200-something thousand baseball games since then. And he's been involved in almost 3% of them. So that's a cool stat. I don't get it, though. It's a young team with a lot of talent. You got guys like Tim Anderson there. I don't know why you don't try to hire maybe, like, a younger manager that can kind of match the team's energy. I think he's going to kind of bring, like, that old-school mentality.
Right.
And if he tries at all to hinder Anderson from doing those bat flips that he does, I will – Well, I'll get rid of Tony La Russa myself. And that's not a death threat. That's just me. I'm going to make that could,
that
a
could,
letter.
That could potentially be received as a death threat.
Yeah. I clarified. I do this sometimes. And I think, make accidental death threats.
I think that's the problem that a lot of people have on Twitter have been pointing out, that
an
LaRusso,
old school manager for a new school team?
Well, LaRusso was completely against the Fernando Tatis swinging 3-0 Grand Slam. So what's going to happen if Tim Anderson goes up there with the bases loaded, full count, goes up there, hits a home run, and you know, starts celebrating before he even gets to first base? I think that, I don't know, I look at it coming in and just say LaRusso knows what he's getting himself into. He's not stupid. He would not take this job at his age if he didn't think that he was going to be able to, you know, make an impact, a positivity on this team. Positively, I can't speak, on this team. And it's got so much talent. And that's kind of the basis that I look at it as from. He had all that talent with the Cardinals all those years Pujols was there. He had the talented A's teams and even some talented White Sox teams in the 80s that he was a part of. I think people should not completely write off LaRusso before he even gets a shot. He's a Hall of Famer for a reason, and I think it might be a year, but I think at one point during his tenure, second tenure with the White Sox, he's going to prove why.
How many years did they sign him for?
Don't know exactly what I would imagine, maybe 3-4 years.
Month by month contract.
You know, maybe. It's a little bit surprising, but I think the one thing they're looking at is definitely to get that veteran, mindset in there and hopefully shore up this young team. But the only thing is, this team went from years of just, terrible baseball, and then they finally get all these prospects in, and they're good last year, and then they move on from Rick Renteria, which is a bit surprising. I know they sort of faltered late in the season, but it's surprising that you don't even give Rick Renteria another year of, managing this team and seeing where he can take this young club. But you go to an older guy, and I just think it was maybe a little bit too soon to move on from Renteria. I mean, you look at here in Pittsburgh, perfect example, Clint Hurdle, who was here for so long.
Clint Hurdle was here for too long.
I think he was here for too long. He was managing teams that were just poor baseball teams, but Renteria really doesn't get a chance with the team that's on the rise. I'm just surprised by this move.
With Clint Hurdle available, Lloyd McClendon available, they surely could have found someone better. That was extreme.
They could have went with A.J. Hinch or Alex Cora even.
Surely.
The media is baffled.
Is baffled
by
speaking
this decision.
Of, speaking of, Woj just said D'Antoni's finalizing an assistant coaching deal with Brooklyn Nets.
Oh wow, that has
they're
completely
building a super coaching
what, we need,
staff
what we're talking
there
about.
Brooklyn.
I know, yeah, they have a super team and a super coaching staff.
Yeah, with Steve Nash.
Also, Tony La Russa just went in and yelled at Greg Brown one day.
Did he?
Yeah, I just looked it up because I remembered it vaguely. But he, just said he was saying inaccurate things and just, went into the broadcast booth and yelled at Greg Brown.
During the game?
I don't remember. All I know is I love Greg Brown, and I'm not going to support anybody that does something like that.
So you're against the La Russa hiring now?
I mean, he's always hated the Pirates.
Yeah, I've never been a...
He's always talked crap on the Pirates, so, yeah.
I never liked La Russa, honestly, just from... I mean, he wasn't really managing much of the baseball that I've been able to watch, but public comments that he's made and his personality, he doesn't seem great, but the experience speaks for itself, and the resume is kind of what
it's
I'm basing.
It's probably like one of those dudes that you hate, but you can't take away what he's done.
Yeah, the resume is really what's kind of basing my decision on.
Do you think they fill out resumes? You think guys that are managers fill out resumes?
No.
I don't think they do.
I think...
Not, like,
actually,
probably
wait,
not
that's
written
a,
resumes.
I mean, actually, yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question.
I was a shelf stalker in 1955 at Laverne's family store.
I worked at my country club pool for 5 years.
I was a pool boy for Miss Johnson.
I moved boxes for a school move.
Oh, man.
Those are my big jobs I'll put on my resume.
And they're like, interesting, interesting.
They'd be like, thanks, we really had to know
that.
What
are a couple words that define you, that define yourself or your personality?
What qualities did you have when you were 16 years old and working around the house that define how you will be as a 76-year-old manager?
Wow.
And then La Russa probably like, the hell do I know? It was 60 years ago.
Yeah. So, Nick, let's get your take on the Steeler matchup this week.
Oh, boy.
6-0 Steelers going to take on the Baltimore Ravens.
6-0 Steelers.
It's the rant I went on Stranded the other day.
Tell us about it.
The Browns are going to beat you guys. It's our year. What was that?
Yeah.
And
no.
Then, it wasn't even a game. You know it wasn't a game because the Steelers didn't almost blow it in the second half.
Right.
That's how you know it's not a game. I mean, they said they were going to lose to the Browns. It was the Browns' year, blah, blah, blah. And then the Steelers, you know, they smashed them. Right. And all the Browns fans wanted to talk about was how all these guys were banged up. If the roles were reversed and they were out there having a parade because they beat our third-string quarterback last year, cool. I guess that's not. I guess that doesn't apply though when the Browns are slightly banged up.
Yeah, they smashed them like Ethan and Ian are going to be smashing pumpkins after Armu Focus.
Wow, and then I mean the Titans game comes, and the Titans are going to demolish the Steelers, and the Steelers hit the throttle and don't let off until the third quarter. And then, yeah, it was an ugly half, the second half, but they found a way to win. They found a way to win, and I think a lot of Ben's interceptions from that game were overblown. The last one was disgraceful. That was an awful. That was an awful.
A terrible
move.
Throw.
He threw in a triple coverage.
I think Ebron was open.
Yeah, Deontay Johnson was open too. Yeah.
Who did you try feeding that to? Juju.
Yeah.
I don't know why he made that throw, but no one wanted to admit the first interception. They got a penalty, and so they were out of field goal range, and they had to throw a heave at the end of the half.
They could have got some yards.
They could have, but it would have been a mess because that's asking Pittsburgh to do a lot with their
That's asking Ben to run. Run up for however far they throw it.
There's a lot of factors going into that scenario that aren't going to work out because clock management's not the Steelers' thing, and Ben moving quickly is not his thing.
Coach Tomlin is not like the clock management that much.
Not a clock management guy.
Second one got batted into the air, which is his fault for not throwing it high enough. I mean, he was getting some passes knocked down all game, but I still think it's blown out of proportion. Everyone's acting like he lost his touch suddenly. I think of the touchdown pass he threw to Deontay Johnson.
It was an absolute missile.
Yeah, it was a little behind him. So, I mean, it's not like a world-breaking pass, but, I mean, it was a gap that was closing. It wasn't that big to begin with.
It was a tight window.
Yeah, he put it a little behind him.
He thread the needle.
Johnson had to make a play. But to put that ball anywhere where he can catch it and the Titans defenders couldn't, it's a good throw. No one wants to talk about that.
Exactly.
No one does want to talk about it.
As for Baltimore... I mean, we almost beat them with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges last year.
Right.
If it wasn't for Juju fumbling, we beat them.
So
or Juju fumbling against New Orleans, then the Steelers would have been in the playoffs.
I don't want to get them losing a bunch of their last games of that season is what I blame. And the crappy call on Joe Hayden at the beginning of that Saints
game. That was also
still
a bad
makes
call.
Me irate.
What that P.I.?
The pass interference
P.I.
in the end zone.
Touching him on the shoulder pad.
Yeah, it was a terrible.
They've been accustomed to those calls this year, too. But, I mean, am I getting a false confidence in the Steelers? Maybe. Maybe.
Are they building our hopes up just to...
When they're the only undefeated team in the league, I would imagine that it's not that built up.
In reality, I knew we were going to be good, but like, I did not think we would be undefeated at this point in the season.
That's the one thing I'm worried about is just the team. With Ben this past game, I think it was a little blown out of proportion, but I think he was just a little bit too comfortable, and I think he stepped back in the season. And the way the season's gone so far, and they're 5-0, and they sort of just demolished the Browns, I think he got a little too comfortable, a little lackadaisical, and just was making some bad throws, and I think that could happen to this team in general. They could get a little too comfortable, and that's what I'm worried about later in the season, losing games they shouldn't, going into the first or second round of the playoffs and losing to a team maybe they should beat. And I think we are surprised by a 6-0 start. It could go to 7-0, but just can't get too comfortable.
Yeah, and we'll just transition with that and go right into predictions. We got a lot of predictions that I have written down this week. We'll include Nick Hedrick on our predictions, and I think you'll enjoy some of these.
Oh, no.
First one, Steelers-Ravens, who wins and why? We'll go from the opposite end of me and start with Golvash, and I will end it.
All right. I say that the Steelers win, and they're able to contain Lamar, and that the offense is going to – I think the young receiving corps are going to wear down some of the Ravens cornerbacks, and we're gonna pound the ball down their throat. And I say it's gonna be a fun one to watch. It's definitely one I'll be tuning in for. And I say Steelers win by a score of 28-17.
I think this is gonna be a pretty close game, like this rivalry always indicates. I think you're gonna see a closely contested ball game. Steelers defense, I think, really comes up big time in this game. They haven't had to as of late, but I think this one's going to come down to it. I think it's going to be a 17-13 ball game. Steelers win.
17-13.
It's low scoring. I really do.
I like it, though.
I like that.
But I'm not going to follow that train. I'm going to go with the Steelers winning this one. I think they come out and right the wrongs they made in the second half. Last week, come out with a vigor that we haven't seen before. Kind of reptilian.
Reptilian.
They're all reptiles. Kind of represents the same thing they did in the first half against the Titans and Browns, but I think they keep their foot on the pedal against the Ravens. Did you see those stats? Like since I think it might have been the Ravens' first year, they were like 23-23 against each other.
Yeah,
that was really cool. That's a true rivalry right there. Unlike our neighbors to the state to the left of us,
yes. who claim it's a rivalry,
Cincinnati and Cleveland.
But I mean, I'm gonna go with the Steelers in this one. I'm gonna say 25, that's not a football number. Yeah, I was between 26 and 27. I'm going to say 30-27, not 25. 27.
You could even have gone for 28.
Yeah, any of those three, but I was so indecisive that I spat out 25, which is not a thing that will happen.
I spat out
30-27 Steelers.
30-27 Steelers.
Let's go Steelers.
Well, I, for one, I'm going to go the opposite way.
Oh, no.
I don't feel very comfortable about this. I think the Ravens come into this game off a bye week. I'm going to factor that in. They're 2 weeks. So they got 2 weeks to prepare for the Steelers. As the Steelers come off of that game against Tennessee, a little banged up. I think Baltimore is going to be ready to go. They've added some new additions. And I think you're going to get a very low-scoring game. I'm going to say Baltimore wins 13-10. This is the first time I've picked against the Steelers all season. And I think it's going to come down to a Tucker field goal 2 minutes to go.
Here's the thing I want to address about this game. The Chiefs smoked the Ravens. But the Ravens are still held in that upper echelon of, like, this is a team that's going to compete this year. So depending on what the Steelers can do against the Ravens, that's how good we know they truly are and how much they'll actually compete with this Chiefs team that everyone keeps saying.
Oh, and one thing I want to add, as we talked about earlier on the show, if the Steelers are able to get a quick start in the Ravens, like maybe like a quick like 14 or maybe even 7-0, the Ravens, once they start trailing, that's when they lose.
Yeah. If the Steelers can get up on the Ravens, I think it's very possible that they can win this game. But I just think this is the first time I picked against the Steelers all year. And I just think that Baltimore will win by like a field goal. The media will go nuts and write off the Steelers right away and say Baltimore's the best.
We knew they were frauds from the
beginning.
Baltimore
is the best in the North. And that's kind of, and then the Steelers are just going to look at it and say whatever and then go on and win the next. Steelers games after this are like Dallas, Jacksonville thrown in there, and Cincinnati.
That's what you get for having what the second easiest schedule in the league? Or is it the
easiest? It's pretty easy right now. It's not that easy going on down the road.
I mean, I'm not going to complain about an easy schedule. I'll take the win.
Games after this are going to be easy. Next one up, Ohio State, Penn State. Quickly, who wins and why?
Ohio State. I think Ohio State's going to smoke them. I think Fields is going to have a field day with Penn State. And I say Ohio State wins by, I think I'm going to go with 40-28.
College game day visits Happy Valley. I think the fans that are in the stands are going to be really hyped about this. I think Penn State is going to have that chip on their shoulder from last game and say, we should have never lost. I think they come in an upset, 31-28.
Wow.
Whoa.
Happy Valley.
Good defense. Sean Clifford leads this team.
Yeah, well, Sean Clifford played like the big red fraud the last week, so I'm going to go with Ohio State 42-17.
The big red fraud. I'm going to go Ohio State 35-17. I don't think Penn State has that much of a chance, especially after last week's loss. All right, this is going to be a big prediction for Nick Hedrick here, as he's going to be very confused by why we're predicting this. So every 2 weeks, bowling.
Oh, I thought we were about to predict Big Brother.
No, we're not predicting Big Brother. That could have been over. Last week's show. It is over.
Oh, thank
it
God.
Is over. Who do you think won?
There is a Jazzy Jeffrey.
Correct. No.
Cody.
Cody won. So
that's my cousin's name.
Every 2 weeks, Austin goes bowling.
2-1.
And who go bowling?
I go bowling. I'm in a league.
With Goldberg.
I'm on a team with my dad.
He bowls with himself.
Wow.
No. So I bowled a 176 in the last game last week. That was my career high.
He rolled 176.
I rolled.
So how do we think I'm going to do this week at bowling? Golvash, how will I do?
All right.
Golvash usually predicts that I get a 113 or a 120.
All right. I say after you're going to come, you're on a high.
My average right now is like 130.
You're on a high of all high. I say this is your best week yet.
Wow.
We're talking 140.
Wow.
150, and then 150 again.
Wow. That's consistency right there.
I like being consistent.
Nate?
I've been lowballing your scores a lot in my predictions.
straight disrespectful.
Like 115, 110, but I'm going to say average. I'm not predicting all three, but I'm saying average of 145. So right in your realm, Andrew.
Nice.
I'll predict all three because I'm not a coward.
I predicted all three.
I think you're going to come in a little cocky based off what I'm hearing from last week. I think we're going to get like a 125 in game one. You're going to go.
That'd be a pretty good start.
You're going to get a lemonade. Your dad's going to pat you on the back. You'll come out with about a 155.
Okay.
In game two.
He said, don't worry, kid. You'll get back at it.
Game three, though, you got that momentum rolling, much like I did when I went bowling with Kayla and she beat me in the first game, and then I beat her by 60 pins the next two games.
Ooh.
You're going to come out and roll, I think, a solid 179.
Oh, my.
He's topping the career high.
I think we're going to get a career high out of you this
week.
It's been a stressful week here, and I really think after that slow start, you're really going to come out and just hit all your spots. Hit right in that pocket.
That's why he's my mentor. So last one, predicting, will RMU Focus turn out to be decently okay? We need 30 minutes of content, and we film for like 15 hours.
No.
Kovash says no. Nate.
I'm worried that it's going to turn. I don't know. I don't know how it's going
to
be.
Nick, you weren't there, but are you worried for us?
You know, I've learned that there's more important things to worry about. No, I'm not worried. I trust you.
I'm very concerned.
He said there's more important things to be worried about.
I'm very concerned.
I said, I am very scared.
I think we're going to be okay, but it's going to be a battle.
We're all right.
Thank you, That 70 Show. Yeah. Thank you.
Come back to Netflix.
Finally, shout-outs. Golvash, we do shout-outs to people that we like and people we appreciate listening to the show.
Our 200 listeners.
Uh-huh. Yeah, our 200
We thank them for listening.
Wow.
All right, I would like to shout out my mom, my dad.
this is the fun part of the show.
My brother and any of his friends who are listening, thank you guys for tuning
in. They're going to school right now.
No, they're not. None of them are in school. They're all online now, so they can take them.
They're all online.
So, yeah, thank you guys for tuning in and supporting me.
Shout out to my sister Rachel and her boyfriend Ace, as they are both first responders.
Yeah.
And want to give a shout out to them and wish them health and safety upon them. And shout out to my sister Allison, who's usually listening, who should be listening now. Corin, always tuning in. My mom, grandma, usual crew.
Wow. I'm going to shout out Austin Bechtold for having me on this program.
For waking you up at 9:40.
God forgive me the ability to play. I just love the game and, love playing. Shout out to my dad coming down from here to take me to a doctor's appointment today.
Oh, cool.
Shout out to
Big
Mike.
Oh, what a guy.
Shout out to Big Mike. Hopefully my heart still works. that's all I got.
Well, I want to shout out you, Nick, for coming on the show today. We really appreciate
what
it.
What a dude.
Wow.
Big baller Nick Hedrick.
What a great opportunity.
I'm feeling thankful.
Oh, yeah. I want to shout out my parents, as always. My dad, always listening in.
Muffin,
my dog. It's the best. Shout out my cousin, who is probably up listening in Boston. And I want to finally give a nice shout out to all the people that are listening that we don't know if you're listening. You know who you are. I say it every week, and I don't know why I say it, but
you say it.
People listen, and I say it.
Getting a bit emotional in here.
I know it is very sad because that
I don't know why I say it.
Because that
but
is
I do.
That is the end of the show today. We are ready to leave today here on Baldwin the Bird.
We leave
to the Halloween. Are You Afraid of the Dark music?
We came in today as kids, and we left men.
Special guest Nick Hedrick. We want to thank you for coming on. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
Have a great Halloween weekend. We will see you with Are You Afraid of the Dark Season 2 next year in 2021. But we will see you next week.